Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Lena. Great to see you again.
Yeah, you too. Awesome. So we're talking about how to track your ideal partner today. And yes. I would love you to still say a few words, even if people know you already, but the ones that don't know you, maybe just say a bit about yourself and what we're going to do.
Okay, so since about 2000, I've been working initially as a NLP practitioner and trainer, and then since 2004 with EFT. And for a lot of people, you know, the quality of our relationships is the quality of our life. And so if we can help people get better relationships, their whole life is looking better. In fact, for me personally, until I got some of my relationship stuff ordered, I couldn't even look at getting health and money and that other stuff sorted. So we all have different, you know, because of our own personal makeup, we have different needs. But yeah, getting relationships working is really important. And the challenge for so many of us is that we just keep repeating old patterns. In fact, in my case, I oscillated between two patterns that weren't working. So,
which were they?
Well, I would either tend to attract people who would tend to bring up my mum issues, which was that anger and rejection. So I'd attract people that would be angry and do stuff that would trigger me. And then the opposite extreme, I'd attract people who are total pleasers, and I would get bored with them, and then I'd sabotage that relationship.
Wow.
So, and a lot of people will be familiar with that one or the other. We all have our own little favorites we go to.
Yeah. I found often big as well, like abundant and resentment, and you know how this seems to be also a big thing in people where, like, did you sabotage your own situation? You felt abundant, and now do you really attract it, or are you causing it yourself as well? And you know, all the judgments that's going on in your head for situations, and then they might not even be like that. We're really conditions are great in some things. So how can we understand that? Like, how can we understand our patterns? Or what would you say is the first step to resolve things, to, you know, become higher, better, stronger?
Great. So there's a few things. First of all, for most of us, the first step is taking self-responsibility. You know, there's that tendency for us to go, it's his or her fault. It's not me. You know, I just keep, you know. So we'll have people say things like, you know, men are just after your money, or women just want sex, or whatever they're. Yeah, I said that the flip way around, didn't I? But you know, it's interesting.
I'm like, is this not the other way around?
Well, sometimes it is.
No, I mean, like, yeah. The thought of it. Obviously, it's not reality.
The stereotype, yeah.
The stereotype is mostly the other way around. So, well,
but, done. You know, we hear these stories of who was it that famously said, I'm so fed up with the cycle of finding someone, falling in love, having problems, getting divorced, you know, losing half my assets, that I've decided I'm going to shortcut the whole problem, find a woman I really hate and buy her house. But, you know, I've had women that have lost three houses to bad relationships with guys. So, you know, all those things can go both ways. I've also had female clients who are really fed up because their husband isn't intimate anymore. So, or their partner. So the thing is that if we have any pattern that repeats, we need to recognize that and take self-responsibility.
Okay, that's step one.
As soon as we say all men are or all women are, we're really telling us something about ourselves.
So how do I get into self-responsibility?
Great. So the first thing is recognizing a pattern. Sometimes it takes sitting down with someone who's more objective to recognize the pattern. Because a lot of people will naturally go into blame. And, you know, as soon as we blame someone else or something else, then we don't have any power. When we
but to some degree, it's also communication, right? Because I think that's also a big thing of how do I even communicate how I feel?
There's a few really good things on that. There's some great books on NVC, nonviolent communication. Mm. And there's a woman, Adrienne, I think her name is, on YouTube, who's got some great stuff on that. Her website is Cup of Empathy. So learning how to communicate, and let me give you an example there. Let's say we've organised a dinner out, and we've said to our partner, look, the place is booked for 7, so make sure you get to my place at 6, and then your date or your partner turns up at 7:30. Now, the normal thing to do is you run, and we go into that attack zone. We're frustrated, we're annoyed. When we do that, the other person is most likely to either defend their position or attack back. So with nonviolent communication, we talk about how we feel and what our need is. So in that situation, you could say something like, I felt hurt or frustrated because I have a need to be there on time.
Mm.
And so when we express it that way, the other person gets what's going on for us in a more authentic way.
Yeah.
And because there's no blame or attack in that, they're much less likely to go into defense or attack. So, yeah, nonviolent communication is a great thing to use. But here's the challenge. Even if you studied and know and practice nonviolent communication, if you are emotionally triggered, everything you know consciously is out the window, mm-hmm. and you'll fly into that rage or anger or sadness or hurt or loneliness or whatever that emotional pattern is. So the real key there then is to resolve the things that happened usually in our childhood that set us up for that.
Yeah.
So if someone comes up to me and says, look, everything was okay until my partner ran off with my best friend, or I got retrenched from my job or something like that. If that happened after the age of 21, then it's still probably a significant thing to resolve and to work on, but that won't be the real key to the issue. So, you know, if we work on when their partner ran off with their best friend, and we resolve that, then I might ask a question like, when was the first time you felt like this? And they'll say, oh, when my first girlfriend or boyfriend dumped me when I was 13. And then we resolve that, usually with EFT. And then I say, okay, what does that remind you of? Or we ask some more questions, or sometimes use some hypnotic processes. Mm. And then we'll go back to, when my younger brother and sister were born and mum didn't have time for me anymore. Or on my first day of school or kinder, when mum dropped me at kinder and abandoned me, and that's when I felt that pattern of loneliness and fear or whatever it is. And so unconsciously we're attracted to what's familiar. And if we're having any pattern that's repeating, then we know that at some level we're creating it.
Yeah.
If I give you a classic example, would have been over 20 years ago now when I was dating, and this was before online dating, there was a thing in the local paper called Talking Friends. And, you know, there'd be this little personal ad saying, in fact, I remember my ad was fit, fun, friendly, almost 40 part-time dad. And people related to that, they would leave a message and you would ring up and connect that way. And I met this really lovely woman, and it was interesting. In our conversation, I mentioned several times how honesty was really important to me. And then she was talking about how she'd had 5 relationships, a couple of them were marriages, to abusive alcoholics. So I know about patterns. I said, well, which of your parents was alcoholic? And she said, yeah, dad was an abusive alcoholic. So I asked her, have you ever dated someone that wasn't an alcoholic? She said, yeah, my last boyfriend, I specifically said, that's it. I'm not going out with anyone who drinks anything again. And I said, how did that go? She said, well, everything was okay for the first 9 months or year, whatever it was. And then one day I came home from work early and caught him shooting up drugs. And I said, you can't do that. And he said, you can't tell me what to do. And it was the same violence. So consciously, she was saying, I'm not going out when anyone drinks, but she found one of the very few people who doesn't drink but has the same addictive and violent pattern, but was using drugs rather than alcohol. So even if we consciously try to avoid something, we'll tend to recreate the same thing until we resolve the causes. So let me draw that up so we can see what it looks like. Is that all? Yep, that's good. So if this is our lifeline, we have what we call a predictable future. If we keep doing what we've always done, we'll keep getting what we've always got. And the reason is because we have this bunch of beliefs and emotions and patterns that are creating things for us, that are our programming. Now, if we can change this, we can create the best possible outcome. You know, and this could be more health, more wealth, better relationships, whatever it is we're after. Now, if all we do is work on what's current, we may get some great results, but we'll tend to recreate the same problems. And the reason is because of the earlier patterns. Now, nothing new happens after 21. So if there's a significant event here, we may still need to work on that, but the real cause of it will be something earlier. And most of what is significant for us happened before the age of 7. Hence that old Jesuit saying, show me the boy of 7 and I'll show you the man. In fact, there was a documentary series on this some time ago called 7 Up. I don't know if you've seen that, but they interviewed a group of kids at 7, and then they followed them up every 7 years and interviewed them. And it was fascinating how the same patterns, the same personalities were there.
Mm.
And I think I may have mentioned in my previous interview with you that a few years ago when I went to a high school reunion with a group of people that I hadn't had any contact with for about 35 years, as I was driving there, I thought of three of the guys who I knew from school. And in my mind, I thought about the personality and what they were like, and I predicted their career and their marital status just from what I knew of them 35 years ago, and got it right 3 out of 3.
Mm.
Now, there were some other people that had taken very different directions to what I'd expected. But for the most part, unless you do some specific interventions to change patterns, you're running on a train track headed to what's predictable.
Hmm.
And the challenge is that just knowing about it doesn't change it. Understanding it doesn't change it.
Yeah. So how do we release it?
Well, sometimes hypnotherapy and NLP can be helpful with this. Generally speaking, I've found that EFT, when skillfully applied to these core issues, is usually the most effective and simplest way of getting lasting results on that.
Mm-hmm.
So with EFT, once we thoroughly apply it to these events that programmed us or set us up for the patterns we don't want, then usually that's a done deal.
Mm.
Now, the challenge can be that there may be, you know, 20 or 30 or hundreds of events that set us up for these patterns. So sometimes there's a bit of work to do to get it resolved. But doing that will totally shift it. And I see that time and time again, especially now that I've been doing EFT for, I think, about 18 years. So now I'm starting to get clients coming back that saw me 10, 15 years ago. And I'm looking at the goals they set 10 or 15 years ago, and we're just going tick, tick, tick. They've got everything they came in originally. Now they're saying, now I'm after this other goal up here, and I need some help with that.
Mm.
You know, so when we really resolve this, the results are amazing.
Yeah, I was just talking with my friend about it yesterday, because we were also saying that it's like you can be aware of specific behaviors, but as you just said, it's like there's one thing to become aware of it at one point, but then there's also the question, okay, do you going to go in circles and try and figure out and go back all the time and see, well, who caused it, you know, and what's the reason? Because obviously some things have possibly happened where you have been so young that it's kind of in your system, but necessarily consciously you can't with call it, because you were like 2 or 3 years of age.
Yes.
And I was even talking to my mom yesterday, because I have a really open conversation relationship with her, you know, and it's sometimes even really hard to, you know, because she said like, yeah, but you know, like I always wanted you and I always loved you. And why do you feel abandonment, you know, or why do you even ask yourself this towards your dad now, you know, because, and I'm like, yeah, but it's not about that. I'm asking myself these things and I'm trying someone to find to blame it on. It's more like that there is a situation and the feeling comes up and I need to deal with my emotional state. And that emotional state is not coming down of me saying, yeah, but my mom wanted me the whole time. And, you know, my dad was me too, but he couldn't maybe show it. But it's still the feeling I need to deal with in that moment, you know, and it's, that's why I also feel it's actually amazing for me personally doing YouTube videos and sharing that, because I also found that in the situation where no one is accessible to help you in that point, because maybe sometimes friends or family can't help you and you can't go just to a psychologist in that 5 minutes when you feel that way, it's actually great that you can, if you ask the right questions and you Google it and you know that someone is actually there that can tell you something about it. And you're like, oh, even through the comments reading on YouTube videos, it just really helped me to feel understood through complete strangers I've never met, because I need help in that moment when I feel this massive overwhelming emotion about something, you know. And I found this is what you just said really profound, because you can be aware of it, that you have this pattern of either way you're drawn to emotional unavailable people, because maybe your parents have been that way, or you feel abandonment and you feel resentment when in fact nothing actually has happened. Maybe someone hasn't responded the way because they've been busy for a day and you're like, why is no one getting back to me? And it's like, well, we just spoke like 48 hours ago, just calm your horses. But the feeling still comes up so intensely, you know. And yeah, I just wanted to share this because I think it really fits well what you just said. That so is sometimes this awareness is and the feeling that comes up extremely doesn't have to do with that you already know it.
Yeah. And look, the one thing I'll say this is that most parents love their kids and genuinely want the best. But none of us studied a subject in school of how to be a parent.
Mm.
You know, we learned all this stuff about simultaneous linear equations and how to conjugate the vowel or whatever, but most of that, a lot of that, we never get to use. What we didn't learn is, you know, how to interact with children, how to raise children. And, you know, really that should be, you know, one of the top five subjects, just your reading, writing, maths, and, you know, relationships and how to raise children. It's not there. So a parent can really believe they're doing the right thing, but it's the response. You know, there's a thing with NLP that says the meaning of communication is the meaning that it's given.
Yeah.
You know, and little things. I remember asking my dad for help fixing my bike. And I was 9 years old, I had a puncture. And Dad said, use your ingenuity. You know, when I was 5 years old, I was fixing my own punctures.
Mm.
You know, and of course, he used to ride 5 miles in England in the snow to deliver newspapers, and man, the stuff our parents went through. But
yeah, and they pass it on as well. I mean, it's like, that's also interesting, like looking at your patterns, you know, of even how how mothers passed on things to other mothers. Or, you know, like when I look at my grandma, for example, understanding how, I mean, they're completely sane for have been through war, you know, and you sometimes think like, to some degree, you can't even blame them because they have been through so much. It's incredible that they're still so sane, but they obviously have also developed some sort of coping mechanism through this time, which is not necessarily applicable now because, you know, now you're kind of safe. And like, until now, obviously, I haven't experienced war. Well, I don't experience it now, but I mean, yeah. Like in Europe, it's present and it really triggers this old generation, you know. But then it also feels like it's still in you, though, because they still pass this indirect fears and behaviors towards specific situations on you that they don't want to deal with. And it's really interesting because I also unravel some things through family constellation workshops and stuff, where it's like incredible how to understand your family patterns, because that's exactly where your relationship patterns go on and on, you know. And I think it's not really only because I guess we're talking about like attracting your dear partner, but ultimately it's pretty much just as soon as you relate to another person where these patterns come up.
Yeah, absolutely. So what we're talking about here, of course, really relates to every relationship, not just relationship with your partner or the person that you want to attract in your life, but also relationships at work or school or university or college. It comes up everywhere. So, you know, it's interesting. You even see some people who have so much pain in relationships, they go, that's it, I'm not going to do relationships anymore, I'll just be by myself. And then the same issues come up in their workplace. You know, you can't run away from it.
No.
It's going to get you wherever you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's helpful to be able to see the patterns, but if you can't see it and you've had the same thing happen more than once, you need to see someone who has the skill to ask the right questions to get back to what caused it. And as you said before, some of those are before conscious memory. So a really big one for me was being conceived out of wedlock. And I had no idea that it happened. My parents never celebrated anniversaries. But when I was getting some work done on myself for my relationship issues, one of the things I went back to is that being in my mother's womb before my parents were married, feeling that, you know, I don't belong to be here, I don't deserve to live, you know, no one can love me, et cetera, et cetera. And we even take that stuff on in the womb. There's been a heap of research on that where even before birth, we're taking stuff on. And of course, there's now a lot of research showing how we take on genealogical patterns. And as you mentioned before, most of our parents or grandparents or great-grandparents were either in World War II or World War I. And, you know, the whole world was terrified. And now we've got, you know, huge parts of the world that are in war and everyone's kind of a bit antsy. So
I think it's also a life kind of topic, because it's also a lot about intuition and trusting your own self. I read a book about empathy at the moment. And yesterday I read this part where until 1990, they still had this book out in Germany from the 40s, where this woman was saying, well, if your child cries, you should let it cry until it stops, right? And it's such a massive thing, because obviously people look for advice on parenting and you read this and you let your kids cry. And for 50 years, people didn't listen to their own intuition and be like, hey, but why does that feel weird to me letting my child cry? I should attend to that and actually look what's going on. And instead of they just letting their children cry, and ultimately I think that's also where abandonment already, where a massive fear is created on not being attended to, and where abandonment already starts from just one person writing a book, having one opinion and sharing this over 50 years. I thought like, well, how incredible is that, you know, where you're thinking about this even.
Well, see, so much of what we believe and teach about parenting now is the exact reverse of what was taught when you and I were young. Well, probably more so when I was young. I'm a bit older than you. But, you know, I remember in my younger years seeing stuff on the news about this guy called Dr. Spock. And he was the first psychologist who said, smacking kids is not a good thing. And everyone was saying he was an idiot. But of course, now, you know, it's illegal to smack your kids. That's child abuse. So most of what our parents believed about parenting these days would be classed as child abuse. And then, of course, now we've got the flip of that, where we've got the helicopter parents who are over-controlling and, you know, wrapping their kids in cotton wool. And then we wonder why kids don't develop any resilience and how, you know, then they have all sorts of anxiety issues and stuff like that because they haven't overcome anything. They've been mollycoddled. So, yeah. And so all these things are factors in setting us up to attract what doesn't work in relationships.
Yeah. I mean, go ahead.
Yeah, so
maybe we can show a round of something. I mean, is there anything you feel that that happens really often that your clients tell you? Like, well, for example, abundance or abandonment.
Yeah, can we get to that in just a moment?
Absolutely.
What I'd like to do, and I'd like to suggest this to everyone watching. In fact, I've got a little worksheet on this, so we'll put some contact details. If you contact me, I'll email you or send you that that little worksheet. But one thing that's really, really helpful is to write a clear list of what you want in your ideal partner.
Yeah, beautiful.
What you want mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually, financially, career, hobbies and talents, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did that about 23 years ago after never being able to have a career or job go for more than, or relationship go for more than 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I should mention this. A fascinating part of that was I had this like inbuilt clock. After 5 years, everything changes, my job, my relationship, et cetera. And that went back to when I was 5 years old, moving from England to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so my whole life changed. I left behind my auntie and grandmother, who were my models for unconditional love, and I stayed with my mum and my sister, who I had some issues with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was fascinating. I was in a workshop run by a psychologist recently, and he was inviting people to participate. And one of the women put his hand up and he said, "Great, I was waiting for you to put your hand up so you could resolve your mother issues." And she went, like, "How does he know?" And then he says, "You know what my evidence is for you having mother issues?" She said, "No." He said, "You're a woman." But it was interesting. He hit the nail on the head, and she was a volunteer, and they did some EFT on some of her mother issues, and you could see the huge change in her just in that time that she was on stage. But we've all got mum, dad, brother, sister issues.
Yeah.
If we don't have brothers and sisters, we've had issues because we don't have brothers and sisters. You
know? Yeah.
you can't escape it.
No.
And even if we had the perfect parent, if there is such a thing, there's always going to be sometimes that they did some things that would trigger feelings of hurt or sadness or loss or loneliness. It's inevitable.
Yeah.
You know, so many of the people I work with, key issues will go back to birth or early childhood, first day of school when the younger brother or sister was born, when older brothers and sisters moved out.
Mm.
You know, so for a lot of kids, they really connected to one or more of their older brothers and sisters, and each time someone moved out, they felt abandoned. Yeah. So wherever you are in the family, there's places those issues can come up.
Yeah.
So let's put this together in steps. First step is to get clear what you're really looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And the more detailed you write that list, the clearer you get. Now, that doesn't mean that your ideal partner is exactly that list. That's just a really good starting point on getting you clear.
Yeah.
And then when you work with someone's good relationships coach, like I look at those and sometimes I see what they've written in there and that'll be a signal of something we need to resolve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For example, if a lot of what they're written relates to security, then we need to resolve that person's insecurity. Anyway, getting really clear, that's the first start. Then you want to look at that list and say, what do I offer that person? You know, I get guys and they say, you know, I want someone who's slim and fit and active and looks like such and such a model or actress, et cetera, et cetera. And then I say, hey, mate, look in the mirror. You know, you look like you're prepping for a job as Father Christmas, and you want someone who looks like a model. Maybe you need to work on yourself on those issues, you know. So once you've got that list, look at that and say, what have I got to offer that person?
Hmm.
And then maybe look at resolving some of this so that you have what will attract that person. So there's two benefits in that. If we don't resolve this stuff, unconsciously we'll attract what is familiar. So the familiar feelings of abandonment or loneliness or whatever, that which has come up from past relationships, the anger, the frustration, the sadness, the hurt. Once that's resolved, then we're in a state where we can really attract. And it was interesting for me, about 23 years ago, I went through this process myself, and 9 days later met the woman who was my next wife, and we had a great relationship for about 10 years after that.
Hmm.
Now, it's interesting. After 10 years, our values and goals had changed and it was inappropriate for us to be together, but we had a harmonious separation. Hmm. You know, there wasn't that stuff going on. There was no lawyers involved. We sat down and worked out how to divide things up and all the rest of it. And, you know, we still connect today and are able to work things out without any problems. So first of all, getting clear on who or what it is you're looking for in a relationship and in your partner, then resolving the emotions around that and resolving the emotions around not having that. So let's just look at that for a moment. Can I use you as an example on this? Would that be okay?
Yeah.
So let's just do this down the bottom here. I want you to imagine if you did have your ideal partner, how would that feel? So there you are. You've got the guy who's just right for you in every way. You've got great attraction. There's everything else is working really well.
Yeah.
How would that feel?
It feels like warm and, but also just nice to share. Just the feeling of being there for each other and, you know, support each other and each other's lives.
Okay. So what are the actual emotions that are going with that? If you've got
it's exciting. Support, yeah. It's exciting. It's beautiful. It's like loving, caring. It's unconditional. It's a warm kind of body feeling that feels good to be around.
Yeah. Okay. So
it's hard to explain. I find it sometimes hard to find words of how I feel, but like there's supposed to be a few.
Yeah, and that's interesting. One of the things that Marshall Rosenberg's talked about with NBC is that one of the things we need to be a good communicator is a good language of emotion.
Mm.
And most of us don't have that. Very often I ask a client, how do you feel about that? And they'll say, I feel abandoned. Well, is abandoned a feeling? No. If if three people are abandoned, one might feel angry, one might feel sad, one might feel lonely.
Yeah.
Someone else might feel worthless. So we need to really dig down to get to those emotions. But like, let's have a look at this. So if you haven't got warmth, what have you got? If you haven't got that warm feeling, what do you have?
Still warmth.
Well, your aim in getting a partner is to bring that in. Now, I know you're a warm person by nature, but when you're not feeling that warmth, what's the feeling?
I guess like more empty, or I don't know. I feel this warm. I'm possibly more in sharing warmth with someone than, you know, I feel this myself. So I just share it with someone. I wouldn't necessarily say I don't feel it when I'm not with someone. I still feel the warmth for me personally.
No, but the purpose of getting the warmth is to get rid of that empty feeling.
Yeah.
That we sometimes have. Yeah. And if you haven't got exciting, what have you got?
I guess like lonely or.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I'm probably going to misspell some things here. That's okay. Anyone that only knows one way to spell something's lacking imagination. So if you haven't got loving, what have you got?
Maybe anger.
Yeah. And if you haven't got caring, what do you have?
I guess as well, like loneliness, being alone.
So that can connect to both.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, perfect. Now, I want to say this. Half of the people out there will have something very similar.
Mm.
Some people have very different words here and may have something different, but here's what's interesting. If five people write warm up here, for some people, the feeling get away from will be emptiness. For some people, it might be coldness. For some people, it might be loneliness.
Yeah.
But this is a great exercise to go through for all those watching. Write down how you're going to feel and the actual emotions that you write down, and then go to, if you haven't got that, what do you have? So these now are the emotions that we need to resolve so that you can attract your ideal partner.
Mm.
You know, one of the big hallucinations we have in the world today is that, you know, if I have this, if I have $1 million, if I have my ideal partner, if I whatever, then I'll be able to do these things and that will make me feel this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually, we flip that around. When we feel warmed, happy, warm, happy, loved, secure, then we will be able to attract someone who matches those feelings and then we'll feel that.
Yeah.
Right? Or rather than then we'll have that. So when we have the feelings, then we'll do what that person does, then we'll have what that person has.
Yeah.
Because we all know some people that radiate this stuff all the time and they're people magnets. They go and suddenly there's a heap of people around them.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that is possibly me, but then that doesn't necessarily mean that it's you're really good in connecting on a deeper level, you know, because sometimes you feel all that and you attract people that I had a few conversations with women about this, and it's sometimes really like you might be beautiful, you might be like attracting people, but then when it comes to the point where it actually goes to the vulnerable connection part, you know, where you actually dig deeper with someone, that's sometimes the tipping point on is it going here or there, which I found really interesting.
Yeah, so let's look for a moment what's behind that.
Yeah.
So after a while, if we're radiating this, and we could add other things to that. It could be sad. It could be miserable. It could be
unconnected or disconnected.
Disconnected. Well, disconnect isn't quite an emotion.
Mm.
If you're disconnected, you might feel empty or lonely, for example.
Yeah.
But when if we're radiating these emotions and we go out there to meet someone, after a while we learn, hey, you know, when I'm doing this, no one wants to talk to me. So then we start pretending to be this.
Yeah.
And sometimes it takes some alcohol or something else for us to pretend that, which is why alcohol and drugs often become part of the mix. So in my teens and 20s, you know, I had a lot of this stuff going on, but if I had a couple of drinks, I could play this.
Yeah.
But of course, once someone got in a relationship with me, stuff like this would start coming out.
Mm. Yeah. So what and do you so, do then, addressing it to the other person that you feel that way?
So then, well, okay, in nonviolent communication, we can say, for example, we might say to our partner, when you're working 60 hours a week and I don't get to see you, you know, I feel empty, lonely, and angry.
Hmm.
Would you be willing to make more time so that we can have a better connection?
Yeah.
But probably what's more important, because if we're feeling this and we're radiating that, who's going to want to be around that? Maybe this is why their partner's working 80 hours a week, to get away from this. Because when they're at work, everyone's giving a pat on the back saying, gee, you've done a good job. Wow, that's great. You got that, whatever it is, done.
Yeah.
So the key here is to clear these emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to resolve some of this now?
Yeah, that's good.
Is that something we could do yeah. here? Now, for all those watching, what I'd love you to do is tap along with Lena and I. And mm-hmm. if you want more explanation on the EFT, have a look at the previous video. Now, even if what you have is very different to what we're working on today, you can set the intention of resolving your issue while tapping along, saying the exact words that Lena and I are saying together.
Yeah.
For example, you might have a sore neck, or you might be upset with your boss. And so you can have the intention of resolving that at the same time as you're tapping, saying something totally different. Before you start that process, write down what the emotion is and give it a score out of 10. So if you're working with sad, you know, I feel that sad and miserable, I want to jump off the bridge, then, you know, that's a 10 out of 10. And if you go, yeah, I'm just feeling a bit flat, that might be a 6 out of 10. And when there's none left, you go, yeah, I feel good. Well, that's a 0 for sadness. Give it a score out of 10, put that aside and tap along with us, and then see what that score is afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you were to tune into that empty loneliness and anger, which would probably be the priority if you just tune in intuitively?
Well, possibly the lonely.
Yeah.
Let's go with lonely, yeah.
Yeah. And you know, for just about everyone that wants to attract their ideal partner, that's usually a big driver.
Mm.
Because as one of my friends said, we're dogs, not cats. As human beings, we're designed to be together.
Yeah.
And it's uncomfortable when we're not. So if you were to just close your eyes and tune into that loneliness, where do you feel that in your body?
Oh, just in my heart.
Okay, good. And as you tune into right now, what's the intensity of that loneliness right now?
Five.
Yeah, okay, good. Now, this is something that seems counterintuitive, because with a lot of therapies, people would look at down-talking the loneliness or whatever the negative emotions are. In EFT, we respect how we're really feeling, and we tap while we're actually saying words that tune us into that, if anything, exaggerate that feeling, and we tap until that feeling is gone.
Mm-hmm.
So let's start tapping. Now, we start on the side of the hand, and you can use either hand, usually tapping. Now, some people you see tap with just two fingers. The challenge with that is that some people end up tapping down here and missing the point. So I prefer to tap with four fingers so that we cover a much bigger than necessary area. And we also get the benefit for stimulating the points on the fingers as well. Mm-hmm. And so just repeat with me. Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
I accept myself as much as I can.
I accept myself as much as I can.
Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
I accept myself.
I accept myself.
Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
Even though I feel this loneliness in my heart.
I accept myself deeply and completely.
I accept myself deeply and completely.
Good. Now, the first point we tap is in the center top of the head. Now, if you've got a big hairdo, skip this point. But so just tune into that loneliness in the heart and just say, all this loneliness in my heart.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Now, I'll just take my glasses off just so you can see the points better. Mm. The next point is on the very inside of the eyebrows.
Yeah. All this loneliness. Oh.
Yeah, that's right. All this loneliness in my heart. That's right. You've done the workshop, haven't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Like going.
Then the next point is on the bone right next to the corner of the eye. Now, if you've got long fingernails, just use the pads of your fingers. So just say, all this loneliness in my heart.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Good. Then the next point is under the eye.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Now the next point is under the nose. All this loneliness in my heart.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Now the next point is known as the chin point, but might be more accurate called the under lip point. Mm-hmm. And that's in the valley here, just below the lip.
Yeah.
So this loneliness in my heart.
This loneliness in my heart.
Now, the next point's known as the collarbone point, and it's actually the underneath edge of the inner collarbone. So if you run your fingers along the clavicle or collarbone mm-hmm. until you find that little hollow there,
yeah,
and then go down about 2 centimetres or about an inch, and then go to the left or right about an inch, mm-hmm. and you can tap just one side or two side. Mm-hmm. Now, look where your fingers are, and there should be about 2 inches or 5 centimeters at most between your fingers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, again, tune into that loneliness and say, this loneliness in my heart.
This loneliness in my heart.
Good. Now, the next point is a hand's width below the armpit. It's roughly where you, if you're wearing a bra, where the bra strap goes across. I'm not going to put one on to show you. But tap there. All this loneliness in my heart.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Good. And then back to the top of the head. All this loneliness in my heart.
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 All this loneliness in my heart.
All this loneliness in my heart.
Now, some people can reach both underarm points. Some people it's easier just to tap mm-hmm. one. This loneliness in my heart.
This loneliness in my heart. I think I'm already on zero.
Yeah, I have the feeling. And this is fascinating with EFT. Often we're tapping on someone and you see the smile gradually creep in as they're tapping down. So that's great. Now, when you think about that loneliness, is there something that reminds you of?
Yeah, I mean, I was just a lot alone because my mom was a single mom, and then she was also working all the time. And, there was, like, a lot of, you know, no one to exchange my thoughts with or...
Yeah.
Then you would go to other people, but they're ultimately not your family. So you sometimes feel like you're a bit of a burden for other people sharing your own things with. And so, yeah, yes. So there's this kind of like where the loneliness. So it's not so much for me personally, I can be alone really well, you know, but it's sometimes the like, on, oh, is this actually okay sharing things with others rather than, you know, not feeling.
Yeah,
your burden to someone. I guess it's implemented a bit through this.
And this is interesting. You can You can feel lonely in a group of people. You can be lonely in a family of 10 people.
Yeah.
You know, because as human beings, we need that deeper connection. Just because there are people around doesn't mean we're not feeling lonely. It's the connection that we really need. So if you were to tune into that younger you feeling lonely, is there a particular place or time or age that comes up for you? When your mum's not there and...
It's possibly like 5 or 6, I would just say, like when I went to primary school, because I also had always different people looking after me. You know, and not saying they were not nice, just...
they're not family and they're not who's familiar.
Yeah.
So I want you to tune into that young you at about 5 or 6 feeling lonely. Would that have been more likely to be indoors or outdoors?
Indoors.
Yeah. And is there anyone else in the room or is there no one else in the room?
No one.
Good. So I want you to close your eyes and tune in to that younger you. Mm. And what is she doing?
Playing.
Yeah. And just see that younger you just playing and feeling really lonely. And where in her body does she feel that lonely feeling?
Just all over in the upper body, maybe. Yeah, like just this part.
Yeah. Okay, good. And what's the intensity of that loneliness for that little Lena back then?
Yeah, acceptance, but it's there. It's just pretty much the status quo of being, but I, you know, can deal with it, but it's still there.
Well, it sounds like you're almost resigned to it.
Yeah. Just like need to deal with it kind of thing. So it's not an option available.
What's the intensity out of 10, knowing that you have that loneliness and there's nothing you can do about it? What's the intensity of that loneliness out of 10?
I feel like it's 0 now because I feel the round of tapping before. I feel it's just really freed me up.
That might have shifted it.
But it's also 10.
Yeah. So, and this is great that this comes up because very often when we face with something too big, we just detach.
Yeah.
You know, I worked with one woman a while ago who had the most horrific, what could really only be called as torture when she was a kid.
Mm.
And when I was working with her, I'd say, how do you feel now? And she'd say, I feel good. I said, where are you? She said, I'm off somewhere else stroking a puppy. So while she was being tortured in her mind, she would go somewhere else so she didn't have to feel it. Of course, that doesn't resolve the issue. That just kind of suppresses it. So if you could just allow yourself to tune into that real 10 out of 10 loneliness, is that still in that upper body or somewhere else?
Yeah, it's just a pain in my body. It's still in the upper body,
Good. Okay, let's tap on that. Mm-hmm. And what I'd like you to do, we're going to up the ante a bit. I want you to imagine as you're tapping now, that the grown-up you can drop into that room with that 5 or 6-year-old you. And as you're tapping on your hand now, I want you to see yourself tapping on that hand of that younger you and notice how she's so glad that you're there to help. That's right. And just say,
even though I feel all this loneliness in my upper body, I accept myself.
Even though I feel all this loneliness,
I accept myself deeply and completely. Even though I feel all this loneliness,
I love and accept myself deeply and completely.
I love and accept myself deeply and completely.
On top of the head, this loneliness in my upper body.
This loneliness in my upper body.
On the inside of the eyebrows, this loneliness playing by myself.
This loneliness playing by myself.
On the side of the eye, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
Under the eye, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
Under the nose, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
And under the lip, on the chin, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
And the collarbone, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
Under the arm, all this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
On top of the head, this little girl loneliness.
This little girl loneliness.
This no friends loneliness.
This no friends loneliness.
This playing by myself loneliness.
This playing by myself loneliness.
This no one to talk to loneliness.
This no one to talk to loneliness.
All this loneliness in my upper body.
All this loneliness in my upper body.
All this loneliness.
All this loneliness.
All this old loneliness.
All this old loneliness.
Yeah, here comes the smile.
Breathing it out. Yeah.
Actually, that was, yeah, good. So now I want you, in your mind's eye, to tune into that younger you. And how is she feeling now?
Yeah, good.
Good, good.
That's really moving. I can feel it.
Yeah, that's good. Now I want you to do this other exercise now. I want you to just close your eyes and imagine you can see that little you.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. And as you look into her eyes, just notice how easy it is to love that wonderful little Lena.
Yes.
That's right. And just begin to notice how the more you love that younger you, the more that love comes back to you and fills your heart. That's right. And the more that love fills your heart, the easier it is to love that younger you even more. And that love comes back to you multiplied even further.
Yeah.
That's right. And just feel that love expanding in your heart. As your heart pumps that love to every bone, every muscle, every tissue, every fiber, every single cell in your body, until every cell in your body is filled, glowing, radiating with the joy, the power, the energy of that love. That's the way. Very good. And then I want you to look into that little girl's eyes, and I want you to promise that little you that you'll love her and keep her safe for now and forever. And then just begin to notice how your heart begins to open up like a beautiful flower. And just bring that little girl into that loving garden in the center of your heart where you can love her and keep her safe for now and forever. That's right. Very good. And see yourself loving her and nurturing her and giving her all the advice and care that she needs and listening to her needs. That's right. And how does that feel now?
Yeah, great.
Good, good.
Thank you so much.
Now, I want you to notice, and for those following that exercise, when you're in that state, what do you think happens to your attractiveness?
Mm. Yeah, you're more settled in your own self. And
you're settled, you're brighter and you're warmer inside, and the neediness isn't there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for this.
That's great. So amazing. That's just a beginning. Those who are watching this as a video, you can replay that part back and back again and keep tapping along with it until you're feeling it as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, the other thing I'll say is that worked quicker for Lena because she's done a bucket full of tapping on other stuff and other related stuff. A lot of us will need to apply EFT like that to 5 or 10 or 50 or maybe even 100 specific events from our childhood to really thoroughly clear those patterns of loneliness or whatever the sadness or hurt or whatever it is that's getting in the way of attracting whoever's right for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also for most of us, there are events back there that we're not consciously aware of that you need to work with a skilled therapist to really assist you to get through.
Yeah. Beautiful. Well, awesome. Well, thanks so much for this. And we're going to have some more things coming. So if people want to have specific topics, maybe they can leave it in the show notes of what they maybe want to listen to, what we can talk about. And would you like anything else to add? Because otherwise, I think this was pretty wholesome. And
yeah, this is great. This is a great start. What would be interesting to look at is, is once people have done this, you might want to look at strategies on dating and things like that. The other thing is, of course, these same patterns, as well as applying to relationships, apply to our career, our financial state, mm-hmm. our health issues, and so on. So this same process you can apply to just about everything. So that's great. Yeah. Feel free to contact me. I'm guessing you're going to put a link down below. Yeah.
Well done. Absolutely.
And that'll be all great. Thanks again, Lena.
Awesome. Thank you. Have a good day.
Will do.